Life is full of what-ifs, some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Like I said, we have got to work together. It's blood and bone. You know, you mark the talisman, I don't make the rules. I mean, basically, we need to deliver 3 sacrifices by Maymus. That's May Day to you, or else it's... Well, it's Burning Skies time.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Decoding TV, a podcast about television. I'm David Chen. Joining me today, she is a TV critic at Vulture. Roxana Haddadi, thank you so much for joining me today to cover Black Mirror here on Decoding TV.
Thank you. I'm very excited to talk about how Black Mirror potentially is not Black Mirror anymore. I don't know. We'll see. We'll see how this conversation goes.
Lots to dive into. On today's episode of Decoding TV, we will be discussing Black Mirror Season 6, Episode 4 and 5. Episode 4, Maisie Day. Episode 5, Demon 79. This will wrap up our time covering Black Mirror, but there is a lot to discuss. You can find more episodes of this podcast at podcast.decodingtv.com. Email us at decodingtv@gmail.com. Let us know what you think of the season of Black Mirror. And also find us on TikTok, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, at DecodingTV. Quick shout out for other coverage coming on Decoding TV. We'll be covering The Bear. We'll be covering Silo season finale soon. Silo, which, by the way, is just renewed for a season 2. We'll be covering the season finale here on Decoding TV. And I am pleased to announce that as of this moment, a lot could change, but as of this moment, we are planning to cover Secret Invasion with a couple really cool co-hosts. I will have more to say about that in the very... Actually, by the time you're listening to this, the episode will probably already have been on the feed because we're recording this way in advance of when we're actually putting it on the feed. So, yeah, keep it tuned in to podcast.decodingtv.com and listen to our coverage of all of those shows. Also, support this podcast. If you're enjoying the show and you're like, hey, I would like to listen to David and a bunch of extremely talented writers and podcasters cover everything else that's going on in the world of television, become a paid member at decodingtv.com. We'd really, really appreciate it. Get ad-free episodes, early access to episodes, and show your support. It really means a lot. Thanks to everyone who makes Decoding TV possible. All right, Roxana Haddadi, let's get to it. Today on Decoding TV, let's dive back into Black Mirror Season 6. This time, let's talk about Episode 4, Maisie Day. We're going to start by talking about overall thoughts. Should people watch this episode? And then we're going to dive into a really in-depth, detailed, spoilery recap, talk about a few other topics. So, Roxana Haddadi, Maisie Day, Episode 4, Season 6 of Black Mirror. Did you like it? Should people watch this one?
Yes, I liked it. I think it is, again, sort of moving a little bit away from what Black Mirror was, had been. But also, it's only like 40 minutes. So, come on. What else are you going to do with 40 minutes?
I do think what is interesting, which you pointed out in a previous podcast, is that episodes 4 and 5 basically have no sci-fi elements in them.
Right? Yeah, like 4 has like a little bit of a commentary on tech of a certain kind. A little bit. I think with the idea of like, paparazzi and like media immediacy and the 24-hour news cycle and how all of those things can be like disruptive and destructive. Episode 5 doesn't really have anything. We can talk about that when
Both episode 4 and 5 take place in the past, you know? So I think that,
sure.
And they don't have any like newfangled technology like Beyond the Sea. So right. I do think it's notable that we have like 3 episodes in this season of Black Mirror that basically have no discernible sci-fi premise at all.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe where the season is going, where the series is going, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
So you like this one. You like Maisie Day.
Yeah. I don't think it's like making any like big points that we're surprised by. Like paparazzi bad is sort of a message that we've known and discussed for a long time. But I thought the twist was pretty well handled. And again, it was short. I cannot stress this enough.
That seems to be the strongest
minutes. After the 80 minutes of the preceding episode, this was like lovely. I was like, oh, 40 minutes. This is great. So yeah, I mean, it's not, it probably among very committed Black Mirror fans probably ranks pretty low because it doesn't, like you said, doesn't do tech, doesn't really do sci-fi. But I liked it as like a, you know, pretty gory, solidly twisty little horror episode.
Well, Roxana, I gotta say, this is probably my least favorite one of these episodes in the season.
I knew it. I knew that this was gonna happen. Absolutely, yeah.
It is the most disposable. It's not poorly done. This is the thing with Black Mirror. It's like every single Black Mirror generally has good cinematography, good acting, good production design, good art design, like all the, you know, good creature designs.
Mm-hmm.
Virtually every single Black Mirror is like technically competent. So the question is, how interesting and fun is the premise? Mm-hmm. How thought-provoking is the final episode? And not very is the answer to both of those questions for me. I thought this is a very weak episode that, again, well done, but just leaves almost no residual presence in my mind. And I think also what's sad about it is that it starts very promisingly. It starts like kind of like in a way where I'm thinking to myself, oh, this might be kind of an interesting look at paparazzi and celebrity culture, and obviously become something very different. So
I
was pretty disappointed by this. If there's one episode you can skip this season, in my opinion, it is Maisie Day.
Like, see, I would completely say that it should just be one you put on in the background while you're like cooking dinner or like folding your laundry. Yes, it's not necessarily thought provoking. What I thought was sort of interesting is I think it has the inverse problem of episode 3, where episode 3 felt like it had a lot of ideas and it couldn't really focus on one, which is why I think we had slightly different interpretations of what the episode was saying, right? It's like it was saying a lot of different things without focusing on one specific element. With this one, it's like there's one specific element, there isn't much more to it, and I don't, you know, like, how do we analyze this? There's not much to analyze.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's like, you know, there's a big reveal, that's a thing. So, and then that's the episode. So, all right, let's get into it.
Yeah.
Spoilers for episode 4 of Black Mirror season 6 right now. Bo is a paparazzo who becomes disenchanted with her job after realizing how predatory it is. Meanwhile, Maisie Day is a star actress shooting a film in the Czech Republic. One night after a shoot, she's driving in the middle of the night when her car hits a mysterious figure. Mm-hmm. Maisie gets out of the car and takes a closer look before driving away, but she's profoundly affected by this event, quickly begins to spiral and retreats from public life. Bo falls on hard times and learns that a photo of Maisie will fetch $30,000. Mm-hmm. So she decides to follow Maisie to a secretive rehab facility. Meanwhile, a bunch of paparazzi also pick up the scent and they all converge on the same location, trying to grab a photo of Maisie. They find that Maisie has been chained up to a bed in this rehab facility, and Bo initially thinks Maisie is being tortured, but in a flashback, it's revealed that, whoa, twist, Maisie actually hit a werewolf, and the werewolf bit her, and now Maisie is a werewolf.
Mm-hmm.
Maisie starts killing a bunch of the paparazzis before being subdued. As she transforms back into a human, she asks Bo to kill her and put her out of her misery. Bo hands her a pistol, and instead takes a photo of her as Maisie finishes herself off. So that is the story. Yeah,
I like the ending a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the ending, the specific ending, like the taking a picture ending, is very smart. And I do think the predatory angle of that fits in with like Joan is awful and does fit in with Black Mirror's overarching like tech is bad. If we're specifically using a photographer, like a photo as tech, and the entire paparazzi industry as tech, which I think you could, make the argument that that kind of coverage fueled celebrity blogs and digital media and like a whole different kind of online experience. I think you could make that argument if you were really stretching it. which you know, you are. I'll try to. But at the same time, it's like, yeah, it's a werewolf twist. Whatever. I think it's fun, but I don't know how much more there is there. But what excited you about the premise? Like, where did you think it was going to go?
Well, first of all, let's start at the beginning. Bo's a paparazzo, mm-hmm. and she's taking photos of this guy who I guess is, it seems like he's gay, but he's not out. And he's like,
correct.
He's kind of like a B or C list actress, actor, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to say, I think this movie takes place around the time that Suri Cruz was born, right?
It's very specifically 2006. Like, right. There are a lot of signifiers that specify it as 2006. Yeah.
Any speculation as to why it's 2006? I guess that's kind of the height, maybe arguably the height of celebrity.
Yeah. I mean, I think
culture,
like,
right?
Yeah. The Cruz child was like a major thing that everybody was trying to get photos of, right? It was like, we have to prove that Tom and Katie actually had this child. And
yeah.
I mean, I remember 2006 was what? My sophomore year of college. And I remember it was like, blogs like D-Listed, Superficial, Perez Hilton, like a bunch of gossip blogs were huge online. So yeah, I think it makes sense to put it specifically in this year. I wonder when the Britney photos were, like when Britney shaved her head. I think that was 2008. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, it was like this early aughts era when all of this was sort of at its most feverish pitch.
I also think... I was talking about this on the Filmcast recently, another podcast I host, and Steven Soderbergh recently did an interview. He has a new show coming out in July, actually. Should have talked about that in our
Full Circle,
pre-show
yeah.
banter, Roxana, about Full Circle. He has a show called Full Circle coming out in July. And he gave an interview recently where he talked about cell phones are the worst thing to ever happen to movies. Mm-hmm. And how thrillers and horror movies and whatever mystery movies are a lot easier to pull off when everyone wasn't reachable all the time.
Mm-hmm. You know what's really funny about that? Did somebody ask him about his era where he was filming things with phones?
Yes, it's interesting. He has arguably done more to advance the cause of smartphone filmmaking than any other filmmaker. So
it is
a little bit ironic. But I do think it's notable that 3 out of the 5 episodes of Black Mirror Season 6 take place in worlds that have no smartphones.
Mm-hmm.
And because a smartphone is such a ubiquitous device, and it's also very narratively difficult to write around a smartphone, and I think that that's also the case in this episode, episode 4, Maisie Day, where if this was in the post-smartphone era, it would probably have been easier to get a photo of Maisie Day. Like,
of course,
you know what I'm
saying? Yeah. I mean, we sort of talked about this earlier. It's like now everybody is a paparazzo. Everybody
right,
has
exactly.
a smartphone. Yeah. Anybody can take a picture of anyone at any time. Like, do you remember the when Ariana Grande was like licking donuts and talking about how much she hates America? I think that was like a person who filmed her on their cell phone. So, you know, once you get into the smartphone era, there are tons of like little celebrity scandals that were because the average person was filming. Yeah. But at this specific moment, it was very much like paparazzi photos, basically from the 90s, I think, until the early aughts. Yeah. The paparazzi photo was like a major cultural deal.
Yeah. So I think that the being set in the era before smartphones at the height of paparazzi, like that's a, when paparazzis occupied a space of extreme cultural impact, and also it was a very lucrative job.
And scorn.
Yeah.
Cultural scorn. Yeah.
So at the beginning of the episode, Bo struggles with the fact that she has photographed this guy having intimate times with this another man, and he begs her not to publish the photos. She sells the photos anyway.
I think she only struggles after what happens to him. I don't think she struggles with taking the photo before.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
And you see her sell the photos for, I think it's like
$900.
Yeah, a few hundred dollars, like less than $1,000.
Yeah.
And then the person kills himself. You know,
yeah.
He commits suicide because of this.
Mm-hmm.
And that causes her to kind of really take stock about what she's doing with her life. And her other paparazzi colleagues try to make her feel better. And they say, hey, you're just doing your job. We're all just doing our jobs here. And
Very notably, all men.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
She is the only female paparazzi within this group, which I think also contributes to her discomfort when there is a moment with like a Miley Cyrus, Britney Spears type celebrity, where we see, and she watches as like these other paparazzi like goad this woman, basically. Like they're yelling insults at her, like they're crowding her. It's very reminiscent of like how Lindsay Lohan was treated back in the day. And at that point is when Bo like walks away from the industry, right? She's like, I don't want to be part of this anymore. I see how it's hurting people. I'm just going to go work at a coffee shop.
Yeah. And I really enjoyed that scene. Like, I have not been a paparazzi, you know, before. I've been a photographer
News
before.
Alert. News
events,
alert, guys.
You know, thanks, Roxanne. It felt very authentic to me, that interaction. The part where they're goading her and then like, the star gets very upset, and then after, like, that's what they want. They want you to get upset so they can grab this very damning photo, and then afterwards they're all kind of like high-fiving each other. It's very gross, very upsetting, right? And so I love the authenticity, the verisimilitude of all that. This felt like, yeah, this is like a crew of people. They all know each other. They're all like part of this predatory industry, and it's like, oh, the setup is great for something that's going to comment on our obsession with celebrity culture, the people who enable it, that kind of thing, you know? So I was thinking to myself, very promising beginning for the episode. Mm-hmm. Then they chase down Maisie Day, and we're like 30 minutes into the 40-minute episode when they're like about to find Maisie Day. And I'm like, what else is like, this feels like we're at the end of act one or the beginning of act two versus like towards the end of the episode. And then of course the reason is because Roxanna, it's all just for this big twist, a big aha, like.
Well, but let me back up. We're sort of skipping over the fact that like the first act of this episode is Bo, but the second act is Maisie. We
Fair
get
enough.
Like a significant amount of time with her on set, and we see that she is like the star of this like fantasy property or whatever.
Seems like a period piece.
Yeah, but her life is like very lonely. Like we see that she is like drinking and doing drugs by herself, like in her hotel room. There's nobody around, right? I think there is a commentary there again on like the cost of fame, which also is something that the documentary episode does. Like, does fame drive people away from you? Do you have to drive them away from you? All that stuff. So I do, you know, again, like, I think this episode is very broad in being like, paparazzi bad, celebrity at a young time, difficult. But you're right. Then like when Bo tracks down Maisie, there's only like 10 to 15 minutes left of the episode. And it's a real question of where else could this go? And where it goes is like a Goosebumps book where she becomes a werewolf.
The thing about Black Mirror is what I love is all the other like little side characters and the little interactions are all really well done. So for instance, Bo has a kind of prickly roommate who...
Oh, you found him prickly? I just found him socially awkward.
Yeah, socially awkward. But he, you know, Bo, you can get the sense Bo is not holding up her part of the roommate contract.
No.
And so this guy needs to like confront her, and he like reads off these cards, and it's just like a nice little it's a nice little touch that makes it feel like these people are real people, you know?
How did you feel about her flavorful cooking? Did you have any thoughts about her cooking ginger and garlic?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
to the annoyance of her white male roommate.
yeah. I mean, what was funny to me about that was like, I thought it would be like she's cooking meat and he's a vegetarian or something.
Right.
But it's
no.
Just like, nope.
It's just she's cooking
it's
aromatics.
It's too much flavor. It's too much flavor.
Yeah, it's too much. You know? It's too
can't, much. Can't handle it. Can't handle it. So,
yeah, I mean, he does suck. Like his interaction with her where he has to prepare note cards for asking for his side of the rent, I did find like relatable as someone who does not like confrontation.
I don't think he sucks. I don't think he sucks. I think he has a roommate who's not pulling her end of the bargain, and he needs to find ways to awkwardly bring it up. And,
I think
you know,
he has racist microaggressions about her food, which are probably exacerbated by the fact that she is not contributing to her part of the apartment. But yeah, so it's like there's that little interaction, and Bo has her friend who's played by, you know, Danny Ramirez from Top Gun Maverick. He also seems like a less terrible paparazzo than the rest of them, who are all like very abusive and mean. But like, that's, I mean, I guess there's also the celebrity doctor.
Yeah, and that's the thing. You know, that's another side interaction that I really appreciate. And it's a nice fake out, you know, because they make you think that Maisie is spiraling because she's killed someone, but in fact, it's because
she's in like addiction recovery. They're like detoxing her or something.
Yeah, but it's in fact it's because she's a werewolf, Roxanne. Yes, that's why she's spiraling.
You know what I love though is the implication here. That the celebrity doctor knows how to treat werewolves because Hollywood like has other werewolves? What is the suggestion? How does he know to do this?
Right. Yeah. It's a good question. Good question. So anyway, so they all converge on this rehab center and there's some, again, a lot of nice moments along the way. The guy at the diner is a little creepy. Bo is following Maisie, but then this guy gets out and like, well, it's kind of like there's something, he's like watching her leave and I'm like, what's going on? There might be something there. Okay. Anyway, and then the guy gets out of Maisie's car and slashes her tires and that's like a very like nice moment.
Maisie Day's like security guy, yeah.
There was one other moment that was kind of notable about the episode, which is, or two other moments that really stuck out to me, right? One is when Bo is trying to help Maisie and then everyone's like flashing lights and you can understand that if this is a situation where a star was genuinely in peril and they were surrounded by paparazzi, their inclination would be, let's take a picture of this and not let's help this actual human who is in pain and distress, right? And so that feels like a relevant and damning commentary on the paparazzi culture, you know, for sure.
Sure.
And then, of course, the final moment when Bo decides, hey, I'm going to help you out a little bit, but only a little bit, and I'm still going to benefit off of it, you know?
Yes.
That's kind of the paparazzi in the best form. The best possible outcome for a paparazzi is, I'm helping you, you're helping me, and we're all profiting off of human suffering. You know, that feels like best case scenario.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think, I think what I found, like, narratively lackluster about this episode, although I liked the horror part of it, it's like, couldn't you say that about all of Hollywood, right? I mean, like, everybody is, like, making money off each other. Like, it's not like the paparazzi are, like, the only terrible job. You could argue that, like, managers and agents and, like, all these other people are also somewhat predatory. I don't know. That's sort of why it was a little... It sort of feels to me, again, like the we're making fun of Netflix thing. It's like, I just want something a little meatier than the observation of, like, the paparazzi are hurting people. Like I sort of know that.
I don't disagree. Hey, Roxanne, I don't disagree. I'm trying to be as positive as I can about this episode.
You're definitely putting a more positive, like you're trying to give it the benefit of the doubt, which I appreciate.
Yeah, honestly, I'm looking at my notes for this episode and literally I wrote in my notes, episode 4, this was just a huge bummer. What was the point of that? That was my note. Because there's nothing particularly insightful, I think, about paparazzi culture. It's a fun little twist, fun little aha.
I think it's a good genre ride. Like I said,
good genre ride.
Put it on when you're cooking dinner or folding laundry or doing your chores or something. It's fun. It's fun and forgettable.
The creature effects were decent, you know.
Yeah, they were fine.
But yeah, I did. I'll just go back to that point I made that I did feel quite terrified when Bo is trying to like help this woman out, and everyone's just the flashbulbs are just nonstop, and you really get the sense
they're creating like a strobe light effect. Yeah. It's like very impenetrable for the actual like. I mean, obviously, it's a purposeful effect for there not to be like a lot of production lighting because the flashes are going off and they're enveloping her, and there's a very like echoing quality to that visually. I do think that was well done. I mean, the earlier interaction with the starlet as well is similar like that, where the lights are going off. And we see her within those lights and how disoriented she has become. I thought that was smart.
But you really get the sense of like why this could be a dangerous situation, you know?
Sure.
And that's in a real life scenario where, I don't know, you're following Princess Diana into a tunnel or something. You get the sense of like why this could be disorienting, confusing. It does really give you that. And of course, the end, you know, Bo taking the photo, it's a chilling moment where she still needs to go out, get that bag, despite the fact that this woman is in great misery in front of her. So,
but you know, it's almost what I almost wish is I almost wish the episode had then kept going. Mm-hmm. Like, couldn't we have also had a commentary on like faked photographs? Like, but like, do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
this seems like a impossible event of which these photographers have taken like hundreds of photos, because they take photos like of her transformation, of her killing all the people in this diner. Like, there are hundreds of photos showing that Maisie Day became a werewolf and then died by suicide. And I almost wish to sort of bring it back to a tech place if the episode had continued that idea of, do people accept Beau's photos? Or, mm-hmm. is, you know, like, does she make money off of this? Or is it, you know, presented as like a deep fake and then everybody, you know, it's like, I just wish, I feel like there's so much you can say right now about doctored photographs. And the episode doesn't really do that. It just stays mm-hmm. in, like you said, the past with a very like easy ending, I think.
Mm-hmm.
An unsettling visual ending, but an easy thematic ending that I think they could have pushed a little further.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
I agree with you that the episode misses a lot of opportunities to go down interesting paths that it yeah. doesn't go down, right? For me, one of the most interesting lines in the episode was when Beau is talking with the other paparazzi about how this guy has killed himself. And she, you know, one of the guys says to her, yeah, well, you know, there's a bunch of people who would kill themselves if we didn't take their photos. Mm-hmm. And I thought that it's like, that person is an unreliable narrator, clearly, but I thought that was a very interesting observation. Like there is actually a symbiotic relationship between paparazzi and celebrities. It's not yeah. just paparazzi bad, you know, it's like more complicated than that. And I thought that would be area that the episode would explore. It ultimately didn't. So,
yeah, I mean, there are yeah. tons of celebrities who call the paparazzi on themselves.
Absolutely.
Like
yeah.
the Kardashians are, that is a major part of their like be everywhere all the time. Omnipresent media coverage type of approach to fame and celebrity. And there's also the reason that like we've never seen photos of Ryan Gosling and Ava Mendez as kids, because like mm-hmm. I think if you're a celebrity and you want to be private, you really can be. You have mm-hmm. enough money to be private. And I think there is, to your point, like a give and take relationship between certain celebrities and paparazzi now and even then, that could have been explained a little bit further. But yeah, it's like, yeah, this is just like an atypically easy episode of Black Mirror in terms of like where it leaves you. Like, I think it's uncomfortable to think about whatever Beau's last photo looks like. But yeah, like the paparazzi who deserved to die died. And that was it.
That was a very chilling moment when there's a paparazzi who's getting the bottom half of his body eaten.
Yeah.
And then one of the paparazzi like rips his camera away from him. Like that mm-hmm. was a very like, oh wow.
Hector, who is like Beau's friend, the like not as bad mm-hmm. paparazzi, like takes the camera and says it's like worth $1 million. And then he and Beau go on the run.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a chilling moment. So there's not, again, it's a fine genre exercise
mm-hmm.
that has virtually no takeaways of any mm-hmm. substance whatsoever. So
which would you rather rewatch, this or the third episode?
Which would I rather rewatch? I would rather yeah. rewatch neither of them, but between the two of them,
are
I certainly think the third episode is a more thought-provoking piece of work.
Is it know? Because of Josh Hartnett?
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Yeah.
So anyway, those are our thoughts on Black Mirror Season 6, Episode 4, Maisie Day.
Mm-hmm.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress. It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
All right, let's get to our thoughts on episode 5, season 6 of Black Mirror, Demon 79. You're listening to Decoding TV or watching it on YouTube at youtube.com/decodingTV. I'm David Chen here with Roxana Haddadi. Let's start with a brief reaction to episode 5. Did we like it? Did we think it was good? Do you think people should watch it? We'll do a detailed recap, and then we will dive into some more further details of things we liked and didn't like about the episode. So Roxana Haddadi,
mm-hmm.
Season 6, episode 5, Black Mirror, Demon 79. What did you think? Do you think people should watch this episode? Is this a good one?
I love this episode, like, so much. Like, if this were a pilot for another TV show about these characters, I would be so happy at the possibility of a series based on the two of them. I think it's very fun. Again, this probably has the very least to do with tech. And I think what's interesting is that people might notice that the beginning isn't called Black Mirror, right? It's styled as Red Mirror. So my understanding of this episode is that it was almost supposed to be like the beginning of like a Black Mirror sort of spinoff series.
Mm.
So I don't know if that spinoff series is ever going to happen, or if it was really just this one episode that it's contained to. But I really enjoyed it. I think it's fun, and no, it has nothing to do with sci-fi. It's really, again, sort of like a fantastical, tonally comedic monster episode. It really reminded me of something that would be in Guillermo del Toro's Cabinet of Curiosities. Mm. I just really enjoyed it and thought it was really fun. I also think that the performances here for me were by far the strongest of the season.
Interesting.
And I say that even against the performances in Joan is awful. I just really was charmed by this episode. But yeah, it's not Black Mirror, right? It's Red Mirror. So I don't know.
Yeah, my understanding of the Red Mirror, like, so at the beginning of every Black Mirror episode, you see the glass cracking and it says Black Mirror. But in this episode, it says, like, you know, this is a Red Mirror movie. My understanding of what I've seen people interpret it as online as this is a in-universe movie. Like if you're living in the Black Mirror universe, you would watch this movie.
Weird. I don't universe know if I like that.
That exists because it basically is like the stylings, the aesthetics of it are like with the credits and everything make it feel like it is a movie. So presumably it is a movie in the Black Mirror universe, right?
So like, okay. So Streamberry exists in the Black Mirror universe.
Yeah.
Netflix exists in the Black Mirror universe.
Yes.
And this movie,
Demon 79, exists. Okay. Because if you look at the art too, like the poster art, it makes it look like it's a move, like it's an actual real life movie. So I don't know. I
notice that about the credits. I didn't necessarily think that it was in universe.
Mm-hmm.
I still would like a Red Mirror spinoff series.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's possible.
I think that would be fun, but yeah. Okay. That's interesting. What did you think?
I think this episode is pretty good and it is propelled to pretty good status almost completely off of the casting and the performances. Like the two main actors who are Anjana Vasan, who plays Nita, and Papa Esiedu, who plays Gap in this episode. They just have such great chemistry with each other and they bounce off each other so well. And it's a genuine delight to watch them do their thing that makes the episode worth watching for me.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the other stuff in the episode is really cool. Some of the imagined sequences are really cool. The effect where Gap allows Nita to see things. You see in the trailer where like he like grabs her hand and like her eyes light up, like, you know, the entire history of you. It's kind of like she's watching. So, you know, that stuff is really cool looking and really well executed. You know, does it have any interesting takeaways? I couldn't figure out really what it was. You know, I think I'm used to Black Mirror having like a moral, you know, and it's okay if you don't have a moral for a Black Mirror episode. Like, I'm not saying it needs to be extremely clear what the moral is, but I don't even know exactly what I'm supposed to think. Like, if it doesn't have a moral, at least it should get me thinking. Like, Joan is awful. That, like, gets me thinking about, like,
okay,
how people's images are used and okay, you know, how technology appeals to our baser instincts, and we should be on the lookout for that. There's no like, real moral there, but, like, it gets me thinking about these things. Demon 79, I'm not exactly sure what I'm supposed to be thinking about at the
really?
End of this, you know?
I feel like
but
you didn't
let's,
think...
Let's talk about it. Let's talk about
okay.
it in,
okay.
the spoilers,
okay.
in the spoilers. So, okay. overall, I'm a big fan of the episode. I like the episode. Mm-hmm. Very solid. And it's primarily because of the performances, but you know, I kind of, it's not why I watch Black Mirror, right? The other thing I just want to mention too, is it has a lot of procedural aspects to it.
Okay.
And I think that Charlie Brooker really likes police procedurals. Like, many Black Mirror episodes play out like police procedurals. They'll introduce like police characters, detectives who are looking, you know, and I think he just likes police procedurals, and this is like another excuse for him to do a police procedural, but basically no sci-fi elements whatsoever. And so, you know, it's just another fairly well executed genre piece. Let's talk about the plot, and then we'll react further to some of the aspects of it. So here's what happens in Demon 79. It's 1979, and Nita is an Indian immigrant and a mild-mannered shoe salesperson working in the north of England. She brings biryani to eat for lunch, but after her coworker complains about the smell of her lunch, she decides to take her lunch in the basement of the department store. While looking through some drawers, she accidentally activates an ancient curse.
As you do.
Later that night, a demon named Gap appears, taking on the appearance of Bobby Farrell from the musical group Boney M. Gap informs Nita that she must kill three people over the course of the next three nights, or else the apocalypse will be triggered and Gap will be exiled.
Exiled from hell, I feel like we should say, right?
Yeah,
like, not
from
exiled
hell.
From Earth, but just like kicked out of hell.
Yeah, like eternal nothingness or something.
Yes.
They had
eternal
some
blankness.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nita completes the first two killings, becoming increasingly skilled at doing so. For her third victim, she decides to kill a conservative political candidate named Michael Smart, but is foiled by a detective before she can complete the kill. She's taken to the police station for questioning, and as the clock strikes midnight, nuclear weapons fall, triggering the apocalypse. Meanwhile, Gap confirms to Nita he's been exiled and invites her to join him wherever he's going next. And the two walk towards the camera and out of frame as the police station ignites in flames. So that's kind of what happens overall in the story. Yeah, there's a lot going on. As I mentioned, there's a police procedural element to this. Nita's murdering people, and the police are kind of trying to track her down. The whole time we are wondering, right, is this something that Nita is just seeing in her head or imagining, or is this an actual supernatural phenomenon?
And I also think, is she being tricked? Is Gap telling her the truth? So there's like, is she imagining it? There's a suggestion that her mother, who has since passed, also had like mental illness, so there's a little bit of fear from that angle. And then there's also the idea that like Gap is a demon, so he could just be
effing with her, you know.
Yeah, and is he just like, you know, having a fun time? A lot of their dynamic reminded me of like The Good Place. This idea of like trickster demons who just, you know, get their entertainment from messing with people.
This episode reminded me a lot of Quantum Leap. You know, where you have like this invisible guy and then this person's trying to like solve this problem, but they don't necessarily believe that they should be doing what they're doing. You know, like very Quantum Leap-esque in a good way. I like Quantum Leap. I think it's a great, you know, great show, classic show. So, but yeah, and it's fun. It's a fun component of the episode, is that you're wondering to what extent Gap is telling the truth and to what extent he's actually trying to help her. And you kind of discover throughout the course of the episode. And I think by the end, we learn that Gap was actually on the level about basically everything, right?
Yes.
Like, he was telling the truth. He was trying to help her out. And that's nice to see. Also, the biggest evidence, I think, that Gap is that this is an actual supernatural phenomenon is when Nita goes downstairs and she finds newspaper clippings. It does seem as though this is something that's happened before, because she finds newspaper clippings of three people who have died mysteriously in the past. And I think the implication is that the person who created the shoe store that she's working in
Yes, the person who created Posset, yeah, this like was department store.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Was but previously again, cursed. Yeah.
So. But don't you feel like, again, that is up for interpretation? Because maybe he just killed three people, right?
It's true.
There's nothing in the newspaper article that's like, and an apocalypse was avoided. Like, it's just
it's
three
true. And,
people
and,
died.
And so the newspaper headlines read the following, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Publican dies in blaze.
Okay.
Workman crushed by collapsing wall.
Mm-hmm.
Woman's disappearance confounds police.
Mm-hmm.
And then May Day celebration grand success. So,
right. So it's like three people died. Who knows if it was because of a curse or just because like the guy who was running the store lost it. But you know what's really funny is if you like ran this department store and you were cursed or whatever, wouldn't you get rid of the talisman? Why did you just put it in your desk?
Yeah, why wouldn't you bury it far underneath the ground, you know?
Throw it into the ocean. Although I guess then you could have like a original Jumanji situation where the game then washes up on another shore.
Yeah. I think the biggest evidence that it might all be in her head is that you already see her imagining murdering people.
Yes.
Before the demon shows up. So she like imagines herself, you know, beating the guy, like smashing the guy's head into the thing.
But again, she is imagining, and I think, so this goes back to like my questioning of whether this episode had a moral. You do see that she is fantasizing about killing people who suck,
mm-hmm.
right? Her like racist coworker. So again, it's 1979. Britain is getting like increasingly conservative. The National Front, who are openly racist, are like gaining traction. Her incredibly awful white coworker, who never does any work, but is the favorite of the boss. Is reading a National Front pamphlet at work and talking about like how they have a lot of great ideas. There is a guy well known within the community who killed his wife but got away with it. So like, you know, Netta has these moments where she is fantasizing about killing these people who pretty clearly deserve it. And then when Gap comes, his rationale is like, you're killing people. I'll let you kill people who are doing bad things so that you feel better about having to kill these people, which is sort of an interesting little twist that I think makes the kills like a little more engaging, I think. Like mm-hmm. these people sort of suck. She has to find herself in killing them. And her performance is so good because she is straddling that line of like, I know these people are awful and let me find a way to naturally integrate the hammer that I brought with me into this conversation before I kill them.
I thought all the kills were really, really well done, you know,
yeah.
in this episode. And also you got some Stephen King Dead Zone going on in here where
mm-hmm.
Gap is revealing the futures of these people. He's
mm-hmm.
revealing that this man under the bridge abuses his daughter. And
yeah.
then like that gives her the strength to murder him. But then also like I was really kind of bowled over by this moment when she kills this guy who has previously killed his own wife.
Mm-hmm.
And he kind of just like accepts that it's going to happen. And it's
yeah.
a very like powerful moment. It's not how you expect that scene to play out. I didn't expect it anyway.
Yeah.
Where he's like, I knew this would happen. Like, I deserve it. And then before he can finish talking, she kind of bashes him in the head with a hammer. And it's like, yeah, it's a really powerful scene. It's really weird to say, but you kind of feel compassion for this guy who's murdered
mm-hmm.
before. And then, but also, like, you also are on Nita's side because she's killing this murderer. And then, of course, you find out that killing was actually invalid
mm-hmm.
because
she's not allowed to kill people who have killed people
right.
because people who kill people, hell or wherever this demon comes from, actually like those people, right? Because
Gap is very bad at explaining
people.
The rules.
Yes.
That's kind of yeah. like, that's kind of a big technicality, Gap. It's like,
yes.
not cool that you left that out.
Yes,
you know?
But I you know, I liked that this was a little bit of like Knock at the Cabin and a little bit of It's a Beautiful Life in that it's a demon attempting to like be taken seriously by other demons as opposed to an angel getting its wings. Like there are a lot of fun
mm-hmm.
little details about the characters that I think Anjana Vasan and Papa Isidu like sell really well, and they have really good chemistry together. It's very like lighthearted and snarky and funny. I think that works. But okay, so I do you not feel sort of, and again, this is like an obvious message, but do you not feel like the message was like racism bad? And if we accept racism, then maybe the apocalypse is the only option. Again, mm-hmm. It's not like a tech message, but there is sort of like a social theme, isn't there?
I guess, because you're referring to the fact that her last kill, she decides, is going to be a politician. And I really love that whole interaction between her and between Nita and Gap at the end, where she decides, hey, this is going to be the guy.
Yeah.
And Gap is trying to talk her out of it.
Yeah.
Because this guy, who is a conservative politician, is going to do great things on behalf of the devil and Satan, mm-hmm. you know?
Amazing and stuff.
Amazing stuff. You yeah. know, he's going to represent Satan bigly.
Well, he's, and you know what's funny is he's going to create the surveillance state that Black Mirror has made so many episodes about, mm-hmm. right?
We it's do like see a glimpse of Metalhead in the yeah. flash forward, which is another episode of Black Mirror, right? So,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I think so. That was like a fun little back and forth. And she's like, "Well, technically, he still qualifies, right?" And he's like, "I guess, you know."
Mm-hmm.
And the episode does allow you to play out this fantasy that has been common in online circles for a while, which is it right to go back and kill Hitler as a baby?
Yeah. You know,
basically, right? Like, is
I mean,
that,
I think
is
the
that,
answer is yes. Sure.
Is that justifiable? And,
no,
and Roxana comes down squarely on the side of kill yeah. that baby, right?
I'm squarely on the Inglorious Bastards. Like, who cares? Just take care of business.
She is, you are firmly rooting for infanticide.
Yeah.
In most circumstances, you know.
Yeah, and sure. Yeah, I don't care. Who cares? It's Hitler. Whatever.
But how do we know that someone even more horrible wouldn't have risen up instead, Roxana?
Okay, well, in then the we meantime, have time have travel and we can go back hands. In time travel and kill that guy too. Look, if we have time travel, we should be doing a lot of murder in the past.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's indeed. Fine.
Yeah, so I think it's complicated because is it okay to kill this guy? You think definitely yes.
And yeah. Yeah.
The episode just made me what the episode did provoke in me is this idea of what if something like this happened in real life where
mm-hmm.
This immigrant murders mm-hmm. this conservative politician and then like and claims it's because she was trying to prevent the apocalypse and so on and so forth. You know, like mm-hmm. that would probably feed this massive wave of xenophobia
yeah.
in the country. Like that's kind of yes. what I was thinking about. But fortunately we don't need to think about any, like the episode absolves us of considering any of that because it turns out Gap was right. Unless of course Nita's just imagining everything, including the apocalypse.
That's which I interesting.
Do think, so the point I was making earlier, Roxana, is you do see her fantasize about killing people and mm-hmm. that is evidence that maybe she made Gap up in her mind. And then at the very end, the police people look at the talisman and it just looks like a standard piece of wood. You know, it is possible to interpret this as though Nita made everything up, I think.
See, I don't think so because I think when we
I'm not saying
get
I interpret it that way. I'm just saying I think it leaves the door open. But okay, go
right.
ahead.
I'm telling you that I don't think that
okay,
though.
Go ahead.
From like a visual perspective, because her fantasies are very coded, right? Like mm-hmm. we get like these quick zooms forward. We get like specific musical notes. Like mm-hmm. there is a way that we know that her okay. fantasies are fantasies. And they're usually because we remain within her perspective. But the first time that we see the apocalypse happening, we shift to everyone. Like we shift to the perspective of the cops. We don't stay with her. She's not the first person who like mm-hmm. sees the apocalypse happening. So I do see. Think it is a definitive no, the apocalypse is happening angle.
Well, sorry for trying to leave it more open-ended for
sorry,
the viewers,
I
Roxana.
Refuse. No.
You know?
But again, like you said, that means like, so what are our ambiguous endings? We only have two this season
mm-hmm.
because this is a very definitive ending. The werewolf one is pretty definitive, I think. And Joan is awful is pretty definitive. whereas it's like three,
yeah,
two and three that are a little more open-ended, I guess.
I would argue two is not very open. Beyond the Sea is definitely open-ended.
Okay.
And this one is a little bit open-ended. Episode five, a little bit open-ended. But yeah, that was probably where the episode was strongest for me, is this idea of, you know, Roxana, you and I are both immigrants.
Sure.
Right? And
child of immigrants, children of immigrants.
I am an immigrant, you know. I wasn't born here. Mm-hmm. Or second generation immigrant, you know, like that's fine. And there are a lot of people out in the United States that would prefer that we weren't here, you know.
Sure.
And what is, like, how does one react to that? Like, what does that do to a person, and how does one react to that? And then what happens when that reaction is at a level that is a crime, you know, which is what happens in this episode, right? And that's kind of what the episode stirred up for me, because you really see this is the one that has the real, like, the intense microaggressions, obviously, with her lunch and everything like that. Pretty rich, by the way, for Black Mirror to have an episode where, as I mentioned to you, there's a character, you know, you have a white woman and an Indian dude in episode one where, like, he doesn't cook strong enough, and in this episode, it's too strong.
I think that is showing the breadth of the immigrant experience.
Mm-hmm. Fair enough.
That is thoughtful to not have us assume every
South Asians are not a monolith. Fair enough.
Yes.
Fair enough.
Thank you.
But anyway, so we see her being microaggressed towards many times during this episode.
Right.
And
outwardly aggressed.
Yeah,
the National Front spray paints NF on her door. Right. It's
And it's like, and you see that for someone in that situation, what their set of available possibilities that's available to them is like not very large. Like, like many people who experience this, like they make themselves smaller, right? Because you don't want to attract any attention. You don't want to like, and it's very, I sympathize with that a lot, you know. I think it's what's also interesting is too, like, my dad probably got microaggressed a bunch of times, or my parents probably got microaggressed a bunch of times, and like, but they probably didn't even understand the language enough to even know what was going on. Do you know what I mean? Like, if people told them their lunch was stinky or whatever, they probably wouldn't even get that was like a microaggression. They probably don't even understand the concept of microaggression. But Nita is somebody who like has clearly, in my opinion, grown up in this area and like knows the, has spent enough time in North of England to like understand the customs and why she and her reaction is like, yes, I'll eat in the basement. I won't complain about the National Front spray painting on the door. And so it's like, let's make myself smaller. And then this demon coming into her life gives her like the opportunity to really quote unquote make a difference, and like what would a person do with that opportunity. So those are the kind of cool things that the episode brings up, but it's such a fantastical premise that it's like not so, it's like a wish fulfillment. It's not like this is relevant to our world today in any way, you know what I mean?
Right.
Like,
well,
yeah,
I mean, I do think the conservative politician is relevant. And I do think the idea of a certain kind of racism hiding in plain sight is relevant. Yeah. And I do think your question of like, what is individual responsibility in response to that? I think that's relevant.
Yeah.
So I think all those things are relevant. I just don't think it doesn't give you like a, and here's what you should do,
right?
Because not all of us can call upon a demon to give us the power to kill people.
that was a nice, like, chilling scene when the politician Michael Smart talks to her coworker and is like,
"Yes,
look, I can't say all the horrible things, but like, you know, I believe
you know that I think them,
right?
And yeah, he's really good. I don't know if I recognize that actor from anything else.
Mm-hmm.
The other main actors I did, and Anjana Vasan was the lead in We Are Lady Parts, which is on Peacock and is a great show. Papa Asidu is from I May Destroy You and Gangs of London.
Right.
He's great. And he has the new show on TNT, The Lazarus Project. So they're both pretty established TV actors. And this episode, I don't know if this was the only episode that had a co-writer, but it was co-written by Bisha Ali, who I think was the showrunner for Miss Marvel. So it is, you know, it is an episode that I think comes from people who have very, I think, intentionally been in stories about like immigration and, you know, like change. London is changing. Like, there are people here who are not just white. What is that experience like? Mm-hmm. So I think it actually was like a very thoughtful collection of people who came together for this episode. Yeah. But yeah, again, like as a Black Mirror episode, I don't know.
It's like on the border. It's like on the border of what I like. Whereas Maisie Day, I'm just like,
no,
barely even a Black Mirror episode at all. This is like on the edge of like, okay, like I kind of understand why this is mind bending in the way that a Black Mirror episode would be.
Mm-hmm.
But it does seem clear, Roxanne, I think, that if Black Mirror is going to continue, which based on the season, I think it should, like it's a strong season, I think, that Charlie Brooker really clearly wants to take it in like a different direction. And I think that this is the most notably like least sci-fi season of the show so far.
Yeah.
And it, you know, if his interests are evolving, then I fully support that. But yeah, let's momentarily get to like what we thought of the season as a whole. I do want to mention Michael Smart does appear throughout the Black Mirror series.
And okay.
Joan is awful on the social. I'm reading from the Black Mirror wiki on the social media app Smithereen. A post by USN states that Prime Minister Smart was met with strong counter protests when he arrived at the JFK International Airport, and in Lock Henry, Smart is seen referenced in several newspaper cuttings that they processed and digitized, where he apparently delivers an openly racist speech in his constituency of Tipley. And later he is expelled from the party and he starts his own independent party.
Okay, so then, see, I don't like that then. because doesn't that contradict the episode?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Unless Lock Henry is also a movie in the Black Mirror universe. But yeah, it does seem to imply that, well, it contradicts the episode because at the end of the episode, everything ends, right? Like the world
Correct.
Ends, right?
So, and it was in 1979 when that happened. I mean, yeah. I get, you know.
That's why maybe it's a movie in the Black Mirror universe, Roxana. You know, that's what I'm trying to tell you.
And, you know, and that's the frustrating thing is that if I... Knowing this, I do put more credence behind your she's imagining it all theory. But my frustration with that is the filmmaking really doesn't support that.
Mm-hmm.
Like in its own, in the episode's own language of when fantasies are happening and when they aren't happening. That's irritating. I don't know if I like that.
I think it's a fair point. I think it's a fair point. All right. Well, any other thoughts on this episode before we talk about the season as a whole? I do just want to also acknowledge, I liked all the interactions between Nita and the detective. I thought that was like where the detective like goes to her house and he's trying to suss out like, is this an actual killer?
Mm-hmm.
And she kind of plays it in a really smart way where everything she does is like very understandable. You know, like it's just, there's a lot of like little night, like all these like person to person interactions. I feel like, feel very real to me. And that's true of a lot of Black Mirror. I think a real strength of the show. So.
Yeah. I mean, he's good too. He was another phase where I was like, where do I know this man from? And I think he was on The Witcher. Mm. But again, it's like, I think this show has always done a very good job of taking recognizable faces who usually are not A-listers, right? You're usually not getting a Salma Hayek, but you're getting like a recognizable TV or movie face. And you're just giving them a role that is so different from what they have done in the past. Either so different from what they've done in the past or in line with what they've done, but with like an interesting twist.
Mm-hmm.
Because on We Are Lady Parts, Anjana Vasan also plays a young woman who is like coming into her own and sort of grappling with being taken seriously. There are no demonic murderers in that series, but it is sort of a similar sort of role. So, yeah, I mean, I've always appreciated that about this show, and I think this season does that as well. But, yeah, the season overall, I don't know. So you are still on board.
I am bullish on this season. I think episodes 1 and 2 were pretty strong.
Mm-hmm.
Episode 5 was... like just based off of the cast alone was really, really good. Although mm-hmm. again, kind of at the edge of what I'd want for Black Mirror. And then episodes 3 and 4 were pretty rough, right?
Yeah.
And that is probably an above average hit rate for Black Mirror. Like just in, from my experience, like to have like 2 strong episodes and 1 pretty good one, I thought like mm-hmm. that's like that is a good record, and I have enjoyed watching the show. I've enjoyed talking with you about it here on Decoding mm-hmm. TV. So it's like I want them to make more of it. But yes, it is notable that out of the 5 episodes, 3 of them don't seem to have any sci-fi in them at all. Mm-hmm. And again, it feels like Charlie Brooker is going in a different direction. I think that's fine. Yeah. And I think the show did need to evolve to some degree. I'm not sure if I like the direction they're taking it in, but still willing to wait and see. I hope they make more of them. What do you think, Roxana? At the end of watching these 5 episodes and talking about them for Decoding TV, what do you think?
I think it was really only 3 that bothered me. Because, yeah, like even the ones that were not sci-fi, I just really enjoyed as genre experiments. And I think if the series continues, it probably will continue in that vein of maybe more of a commentary on like storytelling as a form and like narrative cliches and sort of what we expect from certain forms of story, which I'm fine with. I mean, whatever. We called it the Goosebumps episode, but I enjoyed watching episode 4. I loved 5. I think 1 and 2 were pretty good. I liked 2 more than you did, I think, because I liked the true crime, like documentary style integration. It was really only 3. And my frustration with 3 is that I felt like it had so much potential that just doesn't go explored. So it's not that it was like a bad idea, right? It was like still an interesting idea that just didn't go somewhere that I expected it to go. So yeah, like I will keep watching. I don't know. Will we have to wait? What is it? Like another 4 years? Like how long did we wait? Wasn't it 2019?
To be fair, you know, it was.
Yeah, it was COVID.
COVID
yeah.
kind of shut down the world, and sure. and I think Charlie Brooker has stated on the record, we already are living through a dystopia. Like I don't need to add my feelings to it.
And yeah, now that... but my man, we were living in a dystopia when you started this show. Like, come on.
Mm-hmm.
That's a cop-out answer to me.
Well, it's just, Black Mirror kind of often puts you in a really dark place. And I think it's the yeah. idea is that we were all in a really dark place and there's no need to make it darker. But now mm-hmm. that many, many people have kind of, not everyone, but many people have been able to kind of go back to normal lives. Mm-hmm. The idea is maybe there's some more space for some of these darker elements. But even among the darker elements, it's like we're not, that's what's so interesting to me is like, at a time when arguably the ubiquity of cell phones, the rise of generative AI and so on is like so prevalent and part of people's lives in a way they haven't been before. Charlie Brooker saying, hey, I'm going to do a little bit of that. It's not nothing. But like the majority of the show is not going to be about any future facing technology. And I think that's interesting. You know,
I think it's interesting. I also think we could see it next season. Yeah. Right. Like we have to keep in mind, like when was this written or produced? I don't know. But
many,
like
many
a lot
ago.
Of
many months
yeah like ago. A lot of that stuff I think has become people have become more publicly aware of it very quickly, I think. Like I don't even think in January we were really seriously talking about like ChatGPT. Like everyone was seriously talking about it, you mm-hmm. know what I mean? So I think like life comes at you fast, and I could see next season going back to being more of a sci-fi space, but he's pretty good at horror, so if he keeps doing that.
It's all very solid filmmaking, you know, every episode. I think episode 6 was directed by Toby Haynes, by the way, very talented filmmaker, mm-hmm. you know, so like mm-hmm. Episode 5, you're right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, you know, all the directors are very strong this season. And mm-hmm. and that's generally been a strength of Black Mirror is they'll get a bunch of different directors to make the episodes. Yeah. And like, it's a great opportunity for people to like do a cool genre piece of filmmaking. So, I ultimately enjoyed this season more than I didn't enjoy it. Obviously enjoyed talking with Roxana Dottie about it. So I'm rooting for it to come back for at least one more season, but we will see. All right. As we wrap up today, I do want to mention if you enjoyed this podcast, you can support it by going to decodingtv.com and sign up to be a paid member. Get access to early episodes, ad-free episodes, and make this show, give this show the resources to keep going. We really appreciate it. I pay everyone who is a co-host on the show, and I depend on the contributions from the paid members at decodingtv.com to make this podcast possible. I also want to mention you can follow us, email us at decodingtv@gmail.com, but also follow us on TikTok, Twitter, YouTube, and Instagram at decodingtv. We broadcast live on YouTube all the time. And stay tuned for conversations about Secret Invasion, Silo, The Bear, and much more this summer. Roxana Haddadi, as usual, it has been an absolute pleasure.
Same.
Where can people find more of your work on the internet?
You can find me at Vulture/New York Magazine, or you can just find me on Twitter.
All right. Well, we'll link to all that in the show notes. Roxana, thanks for the chat. And until next time here on Decoding TV, stay safe. We'll talk to you soon. And try to ignore any demons that tell you to kill people.
No, I'm definitely not going to. All right. Bye, guys. Bye.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.